Well, but now you've heard this presidential election is, as we said, so close that one candidate may win the popular vote and the other the electoral vote. That's the number of electors given each state, and they sort of vote in proxy for citizens, a vote that trumps the popular vote. Mo Rocca, the correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning and, of course, panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, wondered, why do we do it that way? He set out to find out, stopping along the way in a grade school where he asked kids to vote for colored pencils or markers. Now, by a show of hands, they chose the pencils. But when the kids broke up in groups, sort of like states, the majority of the groups, the electors, voted for the markers. And one little guy went ballistic.
Everybody should think it's unfair because it's not just about the electors' vote. It's about everybody's vote.
Oh, Aubrey, you are a rabble-rouser. I mean, clearly you're trying to whip them up into a frenzy.
It has to be fair for everybody who voted for markers, not just for color pencils. It's 14 to 10. It should stay that way.
A grade schooler playing the part, you could say, of Al Gore and other candidates who lost the White House even though they won the popular vote. In Mo Rocca's new documentary, Electoral Dysfunction, which takes up questions about the Electoral College, voter IDs, indecipherable ballots during the 2008 election. And Mo Rocca joins us from CBS Radio in New York. Mo, first, we know you've addressed this before, but again, is it possible you did not coach that kid?
I did not. It turns out that third graders have an uncorrupted sense of fairness, and I think we should bring all contentious issues before them because they haven't yet been brainwashed to believe that things like the Electoral College make sense, which they don't.
Well, remind us why we have it. We know that the South felt underrepresented, so slaves were counted as three-fifths of one vote to try to balance the North and the South, and this Electoral College was instituted.
That's exactly right. That's one of the main reasons. The other reason was that the Founding Fathers weren't sure who should be given the right to vote. And in order to create this compact among 13 states and get everyone to sign on, they kicked it over to the states. And so we end up with this indirect election.
Well, so we have this system, again, because, as you said, Congress thought, well, let's leave it up to the states, meaning, by the way, that there's 13,000 separate voting districts with all sorts of different ways of approaching voting. And also, as different voting experts say to you in your film, this means that the three or four biggest states have pretty much no role in elections because candidates end up going for the electoral votes in those same, you know, five or six states when it gets down to the wire.
Right. The most common defense of the Electoral College is it protects the small states. And I'm so sick of hearing about the small states. And I'll explain why. It doesn't protect the small states. It does not mean that candidates are forced to campaign all over the country. They simply don't. They end up campaigning in about nine swing states, give or take. And what's more, the swing states, just like Iowa in the caucuses and New Hampshire in the primaries, end up exercising an undue influence over legislative agendas. Tom Tancredo, who is a very right-wing guy, former congressman from Colorado, he turned against the Electoral College when his president, George W. Bush, during his first term, pushed through the prescription drug bill, which was a gigantic bill that no one ended up liking. But Tancredo says, we all knew in Congress that the only reason that George Bush wanted this bill was to secure Florida for the 2004 race. And that's where the Electoral College begins to exercise a really unhealthy influence over lawmaking.
Well, and Tom Tancredo is one who backs legislation to change the way we vote to a popular vote. But we've just started to approach some of the issues of voting that you talk about. There's the idea of whether or not voting in the U.S. is a right given by the Constitution or a privilege. As it turns out, it's not in the Constitution, which makes us like Libya and Iran.
And Chechnya.
And then you take us to some of the issues that we're seeing in this election in particular. Indiana, home to one of the toughest ID laws in the country. We meet Dee Dee Benke, a Republican operative, who says she's very worried about voter fraud. Let's listen.
What I worry about are the absentee votes that are not legitimate. That is what I worry about. I just want it fair. I just want the person who gets the most votes legitimately to win. I do.
Sure.
I just don't want any cheating going on because that would just be terrible. The voter fraud is what's worrying me.
And we also meet a Democratic leader, Mike Marshall. He's from Jennings County in Indiana, and he spends an unbelievable amount of time trying to get out the vote.
I went to a house at 11 o'clock last night, and I'd been out there three other different days because we had to get her signed up by the deadline last night by midnight. We found her home at 11:15. She was asleep. I woke her up. We got her signed up, and so it would arrive in the election office last night by fax before the midnight deadline. And I was very satisfied. That's a rush to me.
So now, Mo, here we are with you in Indiana in 2008. What did people who wrote the law in Indiana about, you know, having an ID, what did they say to you about wanting one?
I talked to one of the authors of the law, and it's a pretty landmark law, the Indiana Voter ID Law, which was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court and is basically the blueprint for a lot of the other laws that are on the books or have been suspended by higher courts right now. The refrain is you need an ID to get on an airplane. You need an ID to rent a movie from Blockbuster. And getting on an airplane is not a right. And we all agree that voting is something sacred, even if the Constitution only treats it as an implicit right. Here's the problem. There are a number of people, is certainly larger than the margin of victory in a lot of these close states, that are regular voters that have voted for decades and don't have government-issued photo ID. They tend to be older, they tend to be poorer, or they tend to be students. The contention is that the authors of these laws, all Republicans, are pushing these laws to make it more difficult for people who tend to be Democrats to vote. The problem with them is that they only address one kind of crime, which is voter impersonation. Somebody showing up at a poll and saying they're somebody that they're not, which to me sounds like an old Carol Burnett sketch with Harvey Korman or Tim Conway. The most exhaustive study has shown that over 12 years, during which hundreds of millions of ballots have been cast in this country, there have only been 10 convictions for in-person voter fraud.
Well, in fact, you meet Wendy Weiser from the Brennan Center, who says Americans are more likely to be struck by lightning. We've heard some of these criticisms that that kind of voter fraud just really is, as you said, rare. And to the question that it's hard to get a voter ID, Republicans say we've made it free. We've made exceptions, for instance, for people who don't want to have their picture taken for religious reasons, to which Democrats reply, the ID is free, but getting one, getting a birth certificate costs money, getting a notary to notarize your paperwork costs money, and it's such a catch-22. In order to get the notarized certificate, which you need in order to get your voter ID, you need the same kind of ID that is a voter ID.
So you wouldn't be asking for the notarized copy of your birth certificate if you already had these forms of ID. So, yeah, they essentially amount to a poll tax, and it's why they've been struck down in so many states recently or halted. There's so many problems with voting in America. Voter ID laws address one of the few problems that we don't have. Now, that's not to say that the system is not vulnerable to fraud. Absentee voting, which is becoming bigger and bigger, is very vulnerable. There are few ID requirements. There are stories of something I think called granny farming, where you have political operatives going to assisted living complexes in Florida and, quote unquote, helping elderly people fill out ballots. That's what's so odd, is that we're making in-person voting much more stringent while we're letting absentee voting and mail-in voting scoot by without the same regulation.
Well, for instance, in Indiana, when someone brings an absentee ballot into the voting place, they need an ID, but they don't need it if they mail it. After the break, more with Mo Rocca. His documentary is Electoral Dysfunction, and as many of you in Indiana already know, it has a surprise ending. That in a minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Mo Rocca about electoral dysfunction. That's his documentary examining how America votes, and he uses Indiana in the 2008 presidential race as his focal point. Now, some have noted that Republicans have suddenly awoken to the inequities of the Electoral College, because this year their guy might win the popular vote and yet lose the election to the other candidate that wins the Electoral College. But Mo also looks at voter IDs, which Democrats largely oppose, registrations. In his film, a woman in Indiana thinks she can't register to vote because she's a felon. Well, she can vote in Indiana, but not in Florida or Mississippi. In fact, there is an ex-con in Mississippi. He's serving 10 years because he voted, not knowing that convicted felons who have done their time and are out are not allowed to vote in that state. And Mo, someone in your film asks, why isn't there automatic registration? I'm thinking, you know, as was done during the draft. And why isn't there uniformity, say, in ballots? You actually have to call in designer Todd Oldham to look at ballots because they're indecipherable.
Why on earth is a county clerk or supervisor designing or selecting a ballot. It's not like people in Indiana are so culturally different than those in Alabama and those in Alaska that we can't have the same ballot across the country. I hate to be that person that says, well, in Canada they do it this way. But in Canada they have one ballot for the entire country. And there's no reason we shouldn't. But again, it's because it's this misplaced idea of local control is best, that the locals know best. Well, they don't. What happened in Palm Beach County with the butterfly ballot in 2000, I think a lot of people forget, is it wasn't partisan chicanery at the beginning that resulted in the mess there. It was Teresa Lepore, a Democrat, who chose a ballot for Palm Beach County, which ended up basically throwing the election to the Republicans in that state.
Well, people said it was confusing. They said they thought they were voting for Al Gore, but they weren't.
It is so hard to figure out. It makes no sense. And Todd Oldham looked at these ballots with me, and you know, he couldn't believe how incomprehensible some of them were.
Vote complete the arrow to the left of your choice like this. To cast a write-in vote, complete the arrow to the left of the blank. See, I'm already confused. And how not intuitive is this? Have you ever been asked to draw a line between two arrows?
It's like a weird drunk driving test. Like, you draw the line straight.
It is. I've never seen this ever in anything. This is just downright bizarre. It's just awful communication. It really makes you wonder if there was not another motive.
Okay, well, back to our storyline in Indiana in 2008, because we met Mike Marshall, the Democratic operative, and his Republican equivalent, Dede Benke. Election day is drawing near, and the Republicans in another county ask Mike in his county to see his provisional ballots. Now, provisional ballots are ballots that are given if there's questions about a voter's qualification. He goes to court, and he fights this. He wins.
When you go out and you actually see what's happening at the grassroots level, it's kind of inspiring. I mean, it's easy to be cynical because the system is so messy. But then when you see people overcome such hurdles, in my opinion, unnecessary hurdles of this crazy system we've created, and we still end up voting for local offices and federal offices, and it's because of these people doing it at the grassroots level.
Well, some of the things they're dealing with are completely different voting mechanisms in every county. Some voters have touchscreen with paper trails, some touchscreen without paper, no federal standards again. And on election day, Mike Marshall and his forces still getting out voters, calling them, for instance, if they learn that their absentee ballots were thrown out. Here's one of those scenes.
Samuel did not have a signature. They're saying Nina Louise Hausberger and Jacob Trimpe did not. Their signatures did not match.
She lives a quarter mile south of Florida.
Let's go.
Get her on the phone. Just call them. Tell them to go.
We just found out that at the polling place, They threw out your absentee ballot because they claimed your signature didn't match with the application. So you have until 6 o'clock to go down there and get in line. If you're in line at 6 o'clock, you'll be able to vote, and that vote will count. Make sure you take your photo ID with you, your driver's license with you, Nina. Thank you. Bye.
Unbelievable amount of work. On election night, again, it's completely different. Dede's county has a computer that quickly tells them who won in that county. Mike's county, they have to tabulate everything by hand, and everybody's gathered around doing it. It's really, as you said, quite something. And then, Moraka, you have a surprise ending.
We do have a surprise ending.
Mike Marshall, the Democrat who is a volunteer. He's been working since he was 16 years old for the party. We watch him, you know, knock on doors, make phone calls. He's indicted by a Jennings County grand jury for voter fraud.
Yep, for forging the signatures on several different absentee ballot applications. The trial is pending.
Well, this is quite something, you know, because first of all, we're reading in different reports that, you know, it's just a couple of ballots. You see him do all this work round the clock, and you can't imagine that somebody would jeopardize. He faces life in prison.
Yeah, he faces life in prison. And one of the things that was striking is that Dede Benke, his Republican counterpart, becomes genuinely teary about the situation and says, you know, it wouldn't be this way if the system weren't so unnecessarily complicated. That's her opinion on it, but I think it's pretty striking. And she says she'd feel terrible if he went to prison for the rest of his life.
Well, he's been indicted. His supporters say this is payback for him fighting the attempt to take away some ballots earlier.
Well, it's going to sound like I'm punting here, but let me just say nothing would surprise me. And once again, it's this Byzantine, just kooky system that we've created in this country, and it's just not necessary. I'm not somebody who clamors for federal standards for a lot of things. I think the federal government gets its nose in too many places oftentimes. But local control is romantic and nice when you're talking about Mayberry. But when you're talking about Palm Beach County in 2000, it's not. And I think that we've created such a monstrous, complicated system, and it's just not necessary.
That's Mo Rocca. His documentary, Electoral Dysfunction, is airing on PBS stations. Check your local listings. It's also available on iTunes and Netflix. For more, you can go to hearnow.org. Mo, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin. Good talking to you.
Okay, so do away with the Electoral College. Here we go again every 4 years. Also, trivia question. Which other presidents won the popular but lost the electoral? The answer and your thoughts at hearandnow.org, facebook.com/hearandnowradio, on Twitter at hearandnow, at hearandnowrobin. Let us hear from you.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu, and the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston, with Os Gêmeos, colorful dynamic paintings by Brazil's most renowned street artists, on view now, icaboston.org.